Thank you. Thank you for both songs this morning. I didn't think it was possible to set the First Amendment to music, but it can be done. Thank you very much. Whenever I set out to prepare a pre-election sermon, I'm drawn back to one of my favorite stories told by ministers as they reflect upon certain incidents in their ministries. This one is from the Reverend David Rankin, who is now retired from UU Ministry. He recalls the time when he served as serving the First Unitarian Church in San Francisco. After delivering a sermon prior to the 1968 presidential election, he received this letter a few days later. Dear Reverend Rankin, politics has no place in the pulpit. When you said that in choosing between Nixon and Humphrey, we should vote for the best man, you were obviously attacking Mr. Nixon. That's the way he tells it anyway. Well, in addition to giving me a good chuckle, the story also leaves me wondering if there is indeed value in even doing such a sermon as this one at this point. It is 2 days before a presidential election. If I were to ask for a show of hands, which I won't, but if I did, of any undecided voters, I feel few, if any of you, I feel safe in saying, would go up. Few hands would go up. And in picking up on Dave Rankin's story, however even-handed I might try to make this thing, it is quite likely some of you who are listening to me will hide here either an endorsement or an attack of a sort, even though it is not my intent to do either. But my why bother thoughts are countered by a single line in a book by Robert Edgar, this one called Middle Church, that he came out with a couple of years ago and to which I have referred on other occasions. At the time he wrote it, Mr. Edgar was an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church. He was also the executive secretary of the National Council of Churches. The NCC, National Council, is a consortium kind of mainline, moderate to liberal Protestant denominations in the United States. Mr. Edgar is also a former member of Congress. He served 6 terms in the United States House of Representatives, representing a district in Pennsylvania. His book is a call to mainline, mainstream persons of faith to not abandon the political arena to the far religious right, but to bring their values into that arena as well. And the line in his book that really jumped out at me was this one. What is politics, if not the highest expression of our moral feelings as a people? Ponder that one for a moment. What is politics, if not the highest expression of our moral feelings as a people? Recall it is being said by a well-placed mainstream religious leader who is also a former 12-year member of Congress. Consider it as well as you think of some of the lower roads that have been taken in this campaign in the competition for any number of offices. Politics is really supposed to be a call to and an expression of our better and higher and more hopeful selves, instead of an exercise, as it unfortunately often becomes, in catering to our baser or more fearful selves. But even as I recognize this, it is largely because I agree with Mr. Edgar that politics, at its best, is an expression of our highest moral feelings as a people, that I offer a sermon such as this one. The basic premise of our democratic principle itself, some of which we've already heard in song, came out of the 18th century Enlightenment. And that principle was that the citizens of a nation, of a country, should be able to bring their needs, their concerns, their values, and their principles to bear on the workings and the policies of their country, instead of being governed by a monarch who ruled by an alleged divine right. Such a principle, noble as it is, did not just happen all at once. It did not come to full fruition in an instant. In this country alone, it has taken 200 years to extend this democratic ideal to the place where it now is, and that is still an unfinished journey. Thomas Jefferson may have written in the Declaration of Independence in 1776 that all men are created equal, but when the Constitution, which he also had a hand in writing, was written a decade or so later, the right to vote was only extended to white men who owned property. In order for a democracy, it seems then, to be truly democratic, its boundaries and its limitations have to be continually challenged, they have to be continually pushed back, and I would say that challenging and pushing at those boundaries has been an integral part of our country's history. And it has provided us with some of our best moments, as well as some of our more tragic chapters. So one reason then, the main reason, for having a democracy is so that people like you and me can bring our values to bear in the public arena. All I'm going to do then with my time here this morning is to share with you some of the values that I will have in mind when I vote on Tuesday. I do this as a way of encouraging you to examine and vote your values as well. To begin with, very personal, I value my personal well-being as well as that of my family. There is nothing at all wrong with casting a vote that is driven, at least in part, by self-interest. This too is part of the democratic ideal. The ideal is that citizens have a voice in the decisions and the policies that directly affect them, including the taxes they pay, the services and benefits that are available to them, and the social and economic policies that impact upon their personal lives and fortunes. These are pivotal issues in this campaign. I would say that attending to one's personal well-being is not a value to be looked down upon or diminished. But neither, knew the fuck of this, but neither is it a value to be held up to the exclusion or the diminishing of a number of others. Like each of you, I carry an identity with me when I go to cast a vote. That identity, in this case, is as a citizen of the United States of America. And I value that identity. For all the concerns that I may and do have with some of the actions and the policies that are taken by the powers that be in this country at any level of governance, I can no more deny and don't wish to deny, I can no more deny my national identity than I can my race or my gender. So even if some of the ways in which the power and the might and the wealth of this country are used have maybe no direct effect upon me, I still see in their use a reflection of my identity, a reflection of who I am. Sometimes, many times, I like the way my identity is reflected, other times I don't. To put it in an even more pointed way, there are actions and policies enacted in the name of America that make me a proud citizen this country. There are others at times leave me feeling deeply disappointed. This gets me to another of my values. I value being a citizen of a country that is respected and that commands a certain kind of moral authority in the larger global community. And that respect and authority, while still in evidence, it is still present, but it has also been greatly eroded in recent years, due in no small measure to our horribly ill-advised war in Iraq. I am looking for a president who will not only seek and carry forth the quickest and most suitable end to our military involvement in that country, but who will also will restore our moral standing as a nation, a standing that has been severely compromised and diminished rather than enhanced over the past 5 to 6 years. I value the security of this nation. I value being able to live peaceably in a safe, well-protected, well-guarded country. I will vote for a president whom I feel will best protect our national interests and national defense, and who also gets it that our national defense and our national interests are not advanced by a either with us or against us stance towards the rest of the world. I believe that our national security is of one piece with our overall standing in the community of nations. I will vote for a president whom I feel will best promote, advance, and enhance that standing. Returning for a moment to what I said about valuing my own well-being and that of my family. I know these are stressful times, even for those of us who live reasonably well-protected lives. The last few weeks of high financial anxiety and uncertainty have certainly underscored that. But I also know this. I know I go to bed each night in a safe and warm bed and home. On most evenings, I go to bed with an even fuller stomach than for the sake of my own health I should probably have. I know if I get sick or have a serious accident, I can get the care I need. I have all the proper cards in my wallet that assure me of that. What I'm saying is I don't have to get up in the morning with too much anxiety about these basic kinds of things. I know I usually have enough other things to be anxious about, but not my basic survival needs. I know, however, that I am a citizen of a nation where a number of my fellow citizens arise each day with these very kinds of survival issues, staring them in the face. And realizing, as I do, that there is no one single one-size-fits-all cure for our many social ills and failings in either the public or the private sectors, I still value being a citizen of a nation that uses its resources and its bounty in as wise and just a way as it can to attend to such basic human needs, and that provides the opportunity for any rightly motivated person participate in the fullness and the blessings that a society such as ours can offer. So when I look all up and down the ballot that will be in front of me on Tuesday, I will vote for those persons, from the president on down, whom I feel will best and most wisely use the bountiful resources of this nation in ways that will strengthen us all, while also attending to the needs of those whom Jesus once called the least of these. What it comes down to is pretty simple, really. I value those things that will make me a proud citizen of this country. I desire leadership that will promote and advance that sense of pride. I will also vote my values by choosing persons whom I feel will continue the unfinished work of removing the barriers and the stigmas, be they of race, religion, sexual orientation, or ethnic background, barriers that impede persons from their full and accepted participation in the life of our country. I value and celebrate the many positive attributes and achievements over the course of our nation's history that have brought us closer to that more perfect union that our founders envisioned and wrote into the language of the Constitution. I equally value the opportunity and the challenge to attend to our still unfinished business and to our broken and unhealed places. I do not expect any one office holder, president or otherwise, to fix all that ails us. What I do look for is leadership that will call us to our better selves, or to what Abraham Lincoln called the better angels of our nature, so that we will each and all feel we have a common stake and a common share in the well-being of this nation. For leadership is not just about getting things done by leaders, necessary as that is. Leadership is also about getting others to to believe in how they can get things done, in ways that will ultimately promote and benefit the common good. I will vote for those whom I feel are best positioned and are best disposed to offer that kind of leadership. And I'll end with this. Come Wednesday morning, I, like many of you, will either be joyful or disappointed. And I do not presume that joy or disappointment come Wednesday will be the same for each one of us here. I just know that we'll all still be here. And this land of ours will still be here, with all of its beauty and with all of its blemishes. I have to say that when it comes to the bond I feel with this country, of which I've been a citizen for over 6 decades, I'm aware that as much as I care so very deeply about who will lead us in the political arena, it also remains for me, our writers and our poets and our troubadours, that I primarily look to when I really need to feel that kind of a positive bond. You know, if I even read enough of Larry McMurtry, I can even develop nice warm feelings about Texas. Apologies to any Texans here, that just seemed like a good line. The America I feel the closest to, really, is the one Jack Kerouac describes as the place where the sun goes down and I sit on an old, broken-down river pier watching the long, long skies and sense all that raw land that rolls in one unbelievable huge bulge over to the west coast and all that road going and all the people dreaming in the immensity of it. A land, as he goes on to poetically portray, where the evening star is drooping and spreading her spark or dims on the prairie, which is just before the coming of the complete night. It blesses the earth, darkens all rivers, cups the peaks, and folds the final shore in. That's the America I still look to. I feel a kinship with Woody Guthrie when he sings, "This land I'll defend with my life if need be, but my pastures are plenty, must always be free, because after all, this land was made for you and me." And I resonate with the late Steve Goodman by way of Arlo Guthrie when he asks, "Good morning, America, how are you? Don't you know me? I'm your native son." I do not expect anyone whom I might help to elect, however fervent my support for them may be, to provide me with the love of this land. I have to find that for myself. But I do expect such persons, as I might help to elect, that they at least do their part in giving me a country I can value and feel pride in. What is politics, if not the highest expression of our moral feelings as a people? I ask you that you take these words of Bob Edwards to heart on Tuesday and in the days thereafter. Examine your values closely, and even though you know that their full realization does not fully lie in the realm of electoral politics, you can still vote in accordance with the values you hold. And if we are not fully united in all of those for whom we will cast a ballot in a couple of days, we can here unite. We can here unite our voices and sing together, "We would be one." It's number 318.